Hey friends, welcome to Cashing In on Content Marketing. I'm Amanda Milligan, the marketing director at Fractal. And every week on the show, I interview marketing experts about the way to know the value of your work and get buy-in for your strategies. This week, we're exploring how startups can create an engine for growth using content marketing. You may know our guest this week from his two podcasts, Marketing School with Neil Patel and Leveling Up, which is also his new book that we'll talk about. Or maybe you know him as a founder, investor, or company advisor. Regardless, I am so pleased to get to meet him myself. Welcome to the show, Eric Hsu.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks, Amanda.
Thank you. So you are a successful business owner. I kind of want to start by talking about your own personal experience with using content to build growth. When you've been working on building these different brands, how has content come into play for you?
Yeah, to me, content is everything. I think there's no way I'd have any of the amazing team members that I have right now or the different businesses without content. I think, and I've thought about this before, if you were to strip me down to my essence, it's really, if I had no business, nothing, I would just still keep learning and I would just keep teaching to reinforce my learnings. So it's been big, and it's also taught me to think long-term. I think both SEO and content marketing are long-term plays, and also to be a great investor, you have to think long-term as well. And so, you know, there's a lot of kind of similar or parallel teachings from like a Charlie Munger or Warren Buffett to even the marketing teachings as well. And those can kind of be used interchangeably. So
let's talk, you mentioned long-term, and as we know, content is not something that gives you immediate success overnight. And I think when I've had conversations with people, both at startups and not, there's hesitation to invest a lot of time, resources, money in something when they're not 100% sure what those results are going to look like, and they know they're not going to know for at least some months. So what is your perspective on that? Why to you is it kind of a no-brainer to get involved with this?
Well, I think part of it goes to my childhood, right? I think it's what I've learned to realize is, you know, if you have some element of criticism or whatever, you know, at the end of the day, it's like you can either get sad about it or you can use it to motivate yourself, right? So my point of saying this all is that, you know, learning to reframe the pain as in something that's good, to run towards the pain. So, you know, when you're not getting results quickly, it's very painful. And so, but then you realize, you look at everyone else that's had quote unquote success. Typically, it takes 3 years for a business to become successful. And usually it's about 2 to 3 years to start to see some results from your content. If you hit lightning in a bottle, you have a great TikTok video, maybe everything just explodes for you. Who knows? I've just been good at the boring growth. I haven't been good at the lightning fast growth, right? And so that's what, you know, that's tried and true. That's what works for me. And I think for most people, they just, they aren't willing to wait, right? Which is great. I think it's your advantage if you try to do content, because to me, it's more of a blue ocean than, like, you know, everyone running paid ads right now. I think it's what, 45% of venture capital goes to Facebook and Google. So wow. It's super competitive.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because we've been talking recently about how we don't even associate like with viral marketing anymore. And that used to be such a big thing, and it still happens organically. But like, if that is your target, like your goal, it just does not get you the same kind of growth if that's what you're fixated on, as opposed to, like you called it, slow growth and this kind of more sure thing. So can any startup benefit from this? Or are there certain questions that a startup needs to ask, like a founder needs to ask? Is this the right path for me, or should I invest in paid or social or some other outlet?
I think so. What I would say, obviously, you know, the broad answer would be it depends. I think it's, if you raised a bunch of money or your business is about to shut down, you probably should go for something that's going to get faster results. I would just say it's, you know, if you're starting from scratch today and you needed to acquire users in the next 6 months or so, you probably want to. You probably do want to think about the paid channels, or, you know, buying someone's audience, right? Their email list, or buying like a podcast advertisement, whatever you're trying to push, just because we know there's over 1 billion blogs in the world right now. So it's super competitive. And if I were to start from scratch today, I probably wouldn't start with the blog first. I'd probably build up a lot of resources and then come back around, and I just probably go try to buy a website in my space. Then I would have the organic traffic and the domain authority, and then I could publish on top of it. I just think starting from scratch today is it's tough. So
Yeah, talk a little bit more about that. I think I've heard you mention that maybe on another podcast about the importance of the audience and audience building, as opposed to just kind of like putting stuff out there and seeing how it goes, like fostering that kind of relationship with your target customer.
I think there's this one diagram that I saw where when you have an audience, it's one person just kind of announcing to a bunch of people, right? And when you have a community, you have people kind of talking to each other. So I think that's a community is even more of a moat, I think, than the content itself. So I think you build up the audience first, you have, your email list starts to go up. And then the next step is you bring people into a community and you connect people, and you're the one that seeds the community initially. And then maybe you have a community manager taking care of it. But I think that's how you get people to continue to come back. That's how you build retention. I think the audience portion, you creating amazing content, that's the touch point that attracts people, and then they'll stay for the community. So I think to me, community is still a form of content marketing.
That's really interesting. You're kind of laying out this blueprint really quickly. Like, okay, first you have to create something that will draw people to you in the first place. So you're a startup. Nobody knows who you are. They don't understand what your value is. Create that content. Then they're there. Why are they staying? What are you doing with this audience? How can you kind of generate this, foster this community, like you're saying?
Right.
That's one of my questions is, you're talking about like fostering that community. Like, how do you get them to engage with you as a brand? Like, how do you draw them in?
I'll just use an example. For me, I mean a lot of different communities. So entrepreneurial communities, I hate using the word masterminds, but I like getting perspectives from the internet marketers out there, right? Like, I love hanging out with the tech marketers, the internet marketers. And I just love learning different perspectives, and I'll take whatever I think makes sense and make it my own. And so I think because I'm in so many different communities, I'm like, why don't I just create my own? So, I have like a community of 10 entrepreneurs that are marketing focused. Like, pre-COVID, we're traveling like every 4 months or so. And then Neil and I, we actually, this is tied to the podcast, because we built up the podcast over the years for marketing school. We built a community around that where we have 7 to 9-figure entrepreneurs, as part of our peer group. And then in September, when we start up again, they're all ready to go. And then we're just hanging out, having amazing speakers, going to cool spots in the world. So that's how we do it. And how we typically do it is we'll bring in, speakers from that we happen to know. And then, it's great food, we'll have some activities, and that's kind of our live community. But then, for my book Leveling Up, we have a Discord group, because Discord's for leveling up gaming, right? So, we have the Discord group, and we have a community manager in there just engaging with people. And then every now and then I'll try to, chime in. And then now they have a Clubhouse-like feature where I'm like, oh, that's cool, because I spent 2 months of my life in Clubhouse, not so much anymore. But yeah, I think there's different ways. There's the virtual communities, there's the live communities. I just think we're seeing more and more people do it. And I think there's even a community for communities. I think it's community.co. So people can
get better. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that about your book. I saw that if people buy it, then they're able to go into this Discord. So that's a perfect example of like how you're building community around just what normally would have been a book purchase. It would have been kind of like a very separate thing, a distant thing.
It's hard. I mean, it's like, by the way, I think we're still working on it right now. We're trying to make it really good. We're actively hiring for community managers. So I'll just say it's not easy to kickstart a community. So
and you're mentioning hiring a community manager. If you think about a whole content strategy, there is a lot that can go into that. And it's not something that typically one person can do on their own, at least to scale. So a lot of people ask me, and I'm sure you've heard this too, where the debate of, do we hire people? Do we outsource this? Where do you, how do you go about making those types of decisions? Like, I know a lot of it has to do with where you are in the business, but since we're talking about startups, it can be kind of tricky, right?
Yeah. I think if we're talking strictly startups, I would probably use marketerhire.com or something like that, where I can hire world-class marketers or someone that's done it before. Or maybe I would just go to LinkedIn and search for community managers and say, hey, do you have some part-time availability? How much do you charge hourly? Which I've done in the past, but ideally you want to get to the point where you can hire them full-time, because I look at it as you have mercenary versus someone that's fully bought into your company. And so the sooner you can get to someone full time, let's say you hit a certain revenue number for the community, then you can, bring that person in ASAP.
Yeah, and I assume that applies to like all different types of marketing tactics, right? And I know that there's a lot of value of having somebody who kind of has a general understanding of all of this. If it's not you, if like you don't know all the different marketing right. strategies, get somebody who at least does so they can hire either internally or externally the right folks.
Totally.
So let's talk about your book because it seems like it has a lot of applications and tips on how you can improve just in general your life or your business. But what can you share with us pulled from that book that might apply to people in this setting where they're trying to grow a brand?
Yeah, I'll try to talk about it in the kind of related to content marketing. So, you know, people have asked me, Eric, your audience is around marketing. Why are you doing this book? Like, wouldn't it make sense to do a marketing book? Absolutely. But that's also, they're like, yeah, you would totally crush it. Like, what does crush it mean? Make more money? That's not as interesting to me as building a new community is, because, you know, over 3 billion people in the world have played a game. And so the total addressable market for that's very big. And so if I'm thinking long-term here with content marketing, right, I'm just going to keep working on the book long-term, and it's something I want to do for the rest of my life. So I can always have a new marketing book, but the tactics, a lot of them, the new stuff, it just goes away in a year, right? Things shift quickly. And there's the evergreen stuff, and there's good stuff out there already. So that's not to say I won't ever do a marketing book, but this book is, I've heard the quote or read the quote, when you have something to say, that's when you write a book. It's not when you want to make money or when you want to capitalize on your audience. And so this book means something to me because I played a lot of games growing up. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's something fun about being able to build a new community and meeting new people. And then also long-term too, if the book is super successful, oh my God, let's just think about, okay, Tim Ferriss wrote the 4-Hour Work Week. Look at all the deal flow he's had, like in terms of investing in amazing companies, right? People that read the book, that might be, parents, right, that are VCs or like private equity. I'm just making titles up right now, or mm-hmm. they could be people doing other amazing things, right? But all you need is one touch point. So I'm like, I like reading physical books. People are like, people don't read books anymore. I just think, it's a nice thing to have, and it's a nice new audience to go after. And nobody's done it, so why not me?
Yeah, absolutely. So what are some of the takeaways in the book that you think might apply to people at startups?
Yeah. So depending on what you think about Neil Patel, I love this. I love this chapter called Thievery. And so this chapter, when I was 12 years old, I won a championship in a game. I actually got destroyed in preliminaries, but these are one-on-one battles with people. And because I copied someone's tactic and made it my own, I added my own little twist to it, that I didn't lose after. I basically was able to win that championship. And at that age, I was like, wow, that's what I need to do. I don't need to be original. So I think a lot of people, when they're creating content, it's like, I need to be original. There's a lot of pressure around having to be original. But when you think about all the things you've seen in the world, you think about Elon Musk's rockets, it's still the fundamentally the same kind of base design. Yes, it comes back to Earth, which is huge, right? But we're just iterating. We're just building on the shoulders of Titans. And so when you take that pressure off and you just understand that, hey, I'm going to draw inspiration from everywhere, maybe 10% of that, 5% of that, 5% of that, it just makes things a lot easier. So that applies to business. It applies to content marketing as well. And I just think it releases the mind. So.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And it can get overwhelming when you approach things like competitive research. And it's a question of, okay, can we do this, but better? And assessing if that makes sense for you? Or do you want to just go like a completely different route? Like kind of like you're saying with this book, like, yeah, you could have written a marketing book, but right. also you could have done something that felt more true to what you wanted. And I would you agree that the same goes for brands? Like whatever you feel as a company is your driving force, like should that lead you to your content plan, essentially?
Yeah, the brand, I mean, the culture, all that stuff that I used to think was a bunch of baloney, it all matters because the brand, I mean, the culture like is the umbrella over everything else. And, it basically is the operating system. It's how you do things. And so, that affects everything. It trickles down to the brand. It trickles down to the content that you're putting out. And so I think at the end of the day, you have to think about that stuff before you start putting out content. Because I remember back in the day when I first started writing blog posts, I would just look at what everyone else is doing. I wouldn't have a why to it. I was just like, oh, they're writing it, so I should write it too. Mm. There wasn't like, but like to what end? So.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. I feel like that's not often talked about, how content is so complementary and intertwined with like the culture of a company. That's not always how it works. Sometimes it's very siloed, or you're, you know, in marketing in general, it's like, here you go, like here are your directives.
Yep.
I'm glad you're speaking to that, because I don't think that's often a point of conversation.
It's tough. I mean, I think if I was a product minded leader, then I'd be talking about product a lot. I'm a marketing minded one, so I think it naturally trickles down the entire company. It really comes from the DNA of the definitely the leader, and then perhaps even the lead team as well.
How, if you're kind of like, if you're not the leader and you're maybe like a higher up, but you're not the person making these calls, how would you recommend like engaging in that kind of a conversation? Like, what kind of questions can you ask to get at some of these insights?
Yeah. Well, maybe I'm interpreting this more as how do you actually get things done when you don't have the kind of authority to kind of implement. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, that's actually useful too. If you have direct tips on that, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll go with that first. I'll try to answer your other question. So, you know, we have people on the team that will reach out to their managers or even people above, and they'll actually do the work and say, hey, like I did this. What do you think about us trying this out? Right. So we have a, going back to culture again, it's a culture of, hey, like it's okay to fail. It's okay to say, hey, I screwed up. And it's also great to push the boundaries and be bar raisers. So they're comfortable doing it. I think it's just making people comfortable and saying, hey, like it's okay to recommend new things, and it's okay to test things. It's also okay to fail. And then it makes people comfortable. So
yeah, that makes sense. This is kind of like a broader question, but what do you think are some common mistakes being made when it comes to startup marketing? What do you think people are fumbling on?
I think it's people. There's a lot of marketing content out there. And, you know, even on the Marketing School podcast, you hear about this new thing. And I think people keep jumping from new thing to new thing. And, you know, in the book, I talk about how success is like a sphere, and then you start in the middle, and then, you know, success is on all the edges. But if you keep, you know, changing directions all the time, you'll never reach one of the edges. But if you just go in one direction, you should get there. And I think it's really picking one channel, one content channel that works well. So if you're B2B, probably LinkedIn. And if you're B2C, maybe you look at the Reels, the YouTube Shorts, the TikToks out there, and go from there. And it could be if you're trying to grow your podcast. Like I know someone that spends $60,000 a month just advertising on other podcasts to promote his podcasts, and it works. So,
yeah, yeah. So let's go back to how these content programs can actually look at a startup. Like I love the example you have of the book. Do you have other examples of what that early content can actually look like, or how you come up with ideas for the type of content that you should create?
My opinion on this, and that was actually, sometimes I get bored and I'll still go into like Ahrefs and look at, you know, do keyword research for fun. so I think going for the long tail keywords, and you know, people kind of poo-poo on domain authority or domain rating. I still like looking at it because it's been a helpful proxy for me. And I just look for, hey, like, okay, here's my domain rating. Maybe it's like a 30. So I'm just going to look for things that are 30 and below from a keyword difficulty standpoint. And I'm just going to go for the long tail keywords first and then slowly build a base up. I really like pain point SEO from Grow and Convert. I think that concept is great, where you know you're targeting, you know, versus type of content or comparison type content where not a lot of people are trying to rank for. So it's really going for the blue ocean stuff first and not trying to do what everyone else is doing, because they've leveled up to where whatever they publish will rank. Let's use Neil's site as an example. You know, he gets a ton of traffic per month, and whatever he published, like if he publishes the word, I think he ranks like top number one for affiliate marketing, like top for like a lot of these broad words. And I think the biggest mistake, at least I made when it came to SEO and content, was going for these head tail keywords a little too early.
Yeah. So it sounds like, if I'm trying to sum up everything we've talked about, it sounds like it's fine to go for things like strategies or tactics that other people are doing. You don't have to feel like you need to be completely original and do like this completely brand new thing. You can do the same types of strategies and tactics, but you have to find your own way through those things. You're not going to be able to rank for the most competitive keyword. You're not going to be able to, you know, create this ultimate guide if it's already been done. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I think also depends on the channel that you're hitting, but I'm kind of more focusing on blogs in this case. But yeah, absolutely. I think you have to go where it's untapped and it's unmined, and then you kind of capitalize on that and you milk it until it's fully tapped. So
So what other considerations come into play? Say you create some of this content over time, you're trying to get a sense of, is it working? Or maybe a few months have gone by and you're like, was this worth my time? Should I keep investing in this? What do you look for?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the goals. So I guess for the Leveling Up podcast, I've been doing that one for 7 years or so, maybe 8 years. And the first 2 years were hell. I mean, I was only getting 9 downloads a day. And I was spending 6 hours a week on it while I was trying to save the agency I took over, Single Grain. And the other, I guess the second year, I was only getting 30 downloads a day. So really nothing. But then I reframed my mind to focus on, hey, you know, okay, I'm not really getting many downloads right now, but I'm building world-class relationships and I'm learning a ton and I'm applying it back to my business. And so I think it's what do you want from it? I think if I solely focused on the downloads at that point, I probably would have given up. Unfortunately, I think if you're working in an organization, you're probably going to be tied to downloads or, you know, organic traffic or whatever. And that's what it is. Maybe there's a kill switch. If you don't hit it in 3 to 6 months, maybe it's done, right? And that's probably not the right goal in 3 to 6 months. It probably takes you longer than that. So having the right goals and then having the right timeline.
It's really interesting that you mentioned like that broader context, because I've actually learned the same lesson with podcasting. If you focus just on downloads, you're not seeing the whole picture. I've met so many amazing people doing this, and the benefit of that, just making more connections and learning from people, is not something that I initially thought about, honestly, when creating the podcast. So even like having that checkpoint, like you mentioned, a few months in, and being like, what else are we getting from this that maybe we didn't even intend on getting, is like a factor into whether you keep going. I think that's really important.
100%.
So any other book tips that you think would be useful as we near the end of the show?
Yeah, I mean, so we got about $65,000 in book sales when I did a Clubhouse room. And, you know, as of this recording, I said this in January when I first started in Clubhouse, everyone, you know, tried to eat me up or like break me apart in there. I was saying, hey, look, I think this is probably a feature. And we do know the big social networks will come in and copy. And what's happening right now? Spotify's in, Reddit's in, LinkedIn's, Facebook in, Twitter's in. I think Slack's going to do it too. I don't think it's going to stop. I think it's a feature. So, you can do a book launch using a drop-in audio platform of your choice. Okay. As of this recording, I personally don't know if Clubhouse is going to make it. I hope they do. When I say make it like big, right? And so anyway, we got $65,000 in bulk orders. And we did a book launch room and we had, you know, a bunch of people show up, you know, people change their icons to receipts of them ordering the book. And then, you know, I would tell them to go to levelingup.com/bulk. That's BULK. And they can find like the different bulk orders. So, you know, one person paid like 35 grand and then there's like a bunch of other things he could get with the books and he'd get like 700 books or so. So, I think doing a book launch room, in addition to all the email pushes, all the podcast pushes that you're doing, I think that's going to be a thing for the future. Because even in Clubhouse right now, you have a lot of Paris Hilton, you have like these different DJs, they're doing NFT drops, and they're making like hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars doing it. So,
well, and this is just another way that you're illustrating how you're building the community, right? And there's something about audio, whether it's podcasts or Clubhouse or whatever it is, it just feels a little more personal sometimes. And I think that's why people are drawn to video too. Do you have any tips? Like, I know we already kind of talked about like how to start with community building, but in terms of actually choosing the platform for that, because I think that some people get a little overwhelmed. They're like, okay, we could be now all, like you're saying, there's a feature kind of everywhere. Yeah. And there are sometimes the obvious choices of like B2B being on LinkedIn, but how do you kind of, do you try them all or do you kind of test and see what lands?
I mean, if I was starting from scratch today, if B2B, probably LinkedIn, but I think long-term I would go for YouTube because they're still growing 10 to 15% quarter on quarter. And, you know, all the kids right now growing up, they want to become YouTubers and YouTube is, they're keeping up from a product perspective, YouTube Shorts versus Reels versus TikTok. I had a guy on my podcast a couple of weeks ago. He went from 0 to 4.2 million subscribers in like 3 months doing YouTube Shorts.
Whoa.
And he's smart. He's like, I don't need the money right now. I'm just going to keep building the audience. This guy's 21 years old, 22. And I'm just going to keep building the audience. I know I'm going to get what's mine later. And so I think having that long-term outlook and just being willing to compound, I think it's amazing. So
that's awesome. hearing stories like that still happening. I think sometimes it can be discouraging. You think everything's diluted, everybody's creating mm-hmm. content on these platforms. It's impossible. So Eric, I've actually been asking kind of like I pivot at the end of each episode, and I ask about a totally different topic. And so far, the last several months, I've been asking about creativity. I've been asking how people have been able, especially in the time of COVID and things not being the typical day-to-day that we were used to, how are you able to stay creative? You released this book in February, so you've obviously kind of been in a creative streak. What are your tips for people?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Look, there's a lot of different creators. There's DJs. I think if you're and you don't need to be an entrepreneur. Entrepreneurs are great creators. Everything you have around you is created by entrepreneurs. But I think everyone can think like that, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, 1 second I'll be like, oh, I want to do this new podcast. I want to do this book. Oh, we should do this event over here. And then, you know, what I do is I fail forward. So I think, you know, if you were to put me on a plane to go out skydiving, I would want to jump first, not because I'm courageous, but because I want to get it out of the way. So I think that's a big piece of it, right? Like just taking that one step. So I think when you're trying to create something, there's a lot of imposter syndrome and a lot of fear. And when I first started writing this book, my mom was like, who are you to write a book? Like, there's a lot of that, right? Mm. And I think taking a lot of that, whether it's criticism or negativity or whatever, and then say, oh yeah, that's great, give me more, because it's fuel. That'll keep you going. And that's what kept me going for the Leveling Up podcast. And if I gave up at that first year, that second year, there would be no Leveling Up podcast, there would be no book, there would be no Marketing School podcast as well. Wow. So yeah, I think, and then you just kind of work towards it. It's never a straight line. You kind of just fall into everything. It's not like I wake up and I know what I, you know, it's not like I woke up at, I don't know, 10 years old. I'm like, I know what I want to do for the rest of my life. You kind of just fall into it through your actions.
And continuously. It's not like you make a decision one day and that's the rest of your life. Like, you can continue iterating, as you said. Yep. So knowing the goal of this podcast is to help people understand the value of content, who would you recommend to be guests on future episodes?
Well, let's see. Who's a prolific content creator? Actually, I would recommend Jake Fellman, the person I talked about YouTube Short. So he's fascinating because he's so young and he moved himself to Alaska, you know, and he's just spending 8 hours a day, you know, creating these YouTube Shorts. So
that's wild. Yeah, that would be awesome to have him on. And also, I just had to ask, what are your favorite games if you're an avid gamer?
Yeah, you know, growing up, it would be EverQuest, World of Warcraft, a lot of Counter-Strike. Now we used to play Smash Brothers when we had the office pre-COVID. Yeah, yeah. That was fun. But yeah, those types of games.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Eric, and sharing your insights. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening. If you've listened to this and want even more tips, sign up for our podcast newsletter by going to the podcast page on the Fractal website. And if you've learned anything from this show, we'd love it if you'd subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and leave a review. Finally, if you have feedback, suggestions, ideas, input about the best American cities to visit for a weekend trip, or anything you'd like to share with me, shoot me an email at amanda@frac.tl. I'm a shameless extrovert who would love to hear from you. Thank you to Sean Kelly for podcast music and editing, and to Joao Pereira for the logo design. And thank you, dear listener. I hope you'll join us next time.